Hello and welcome to episode 33 of the Book Wars Pod. I'm Kristen, I'm here with Kate and Chris, and today we're going to be discussing Lost Stars by Claudia Gray.
Finally.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Everyone's been
the highly anticipated Lost Stars by Claudia Gray that everybody's been clamoring for.
Yes.
And we'll be discussing the beginning of the book. We don't really want to say chapter one because there's some fiddle faddle before chapter one. So pre-fiddle faddle to chapter nine. And before we get into the discussion, what are y'all drinking tonight?
What is this, Chris?
We are drinking a lovely Salentino from a local merchant named Joe. Gave us a really great deal on it.
What's a Salentino? Is that a wine?
It sure is. It's a red wine.
Oh, I don't know what that is.
Yeah, we just casually treat Trader Joe's like the wine store, and so here we are.
Well, I mean,
they have a great selection.
The Trader Joe's wine selection is incredible. It's a lot of stuff you can't get other places, and it's a lot of like interesting varietals. So
I saw Ridge Wine at Trader Joe's once. I was very impressed. I saw it happened once. I never saw it again.
It doesn't matter.
There was like one bottle for like $40.
That's like when people are like, one time I saw like a wafer that was like flavored like Christmas. And then I never saw it again at Trader Joe's. Like, okay, great. Well, their seasonal stuff is, like, known to sell out
then
never return.
I was going to say, I thought you were going to, like, be like those people who see Jesus in a waffle. Like, I thought that's where you were going with that.
No, like, I just mean, like, their seasonal stuff. People would be like, one time I had a delicious blah, blah, blah fall from Trader Joe's. I've never seen it again.
Okay.
Like, that's not a thing.
The way you phrased it.
Spice cheese, that's not a thing.
The way you phrased it was just like somebody was walking on the street, saw a singular wafer, and they were like, oh my god.
Yeah, and it had Jesus' face in it. That's what I'm saying.
I'm drinking Lagunitas IPA from Petaluma. That's in Northern California, right?
Sure is.
Christopher. Great. And I think everybody's like had this, but I'm trying to do this thing where I don't buy more beer. This was in the fridge. So we're drinking it.
Famous last words.
It's delicious. Who doesn't love a Lagunitas IPA? And I have it in my GW Alumni Association pre the logo change, the font change, zip up bottle koozie.
Nice.
Vintage.
I personally don't prefer IPAs, but you do you.
Oh, I'm drinking an IPA on like every episode of the Book Wars Pod, Chris, as you know.
Oh my god. Well, so I went to go see Last Jedi again last night. And great decision, but B, so
by
I'm like,
himself
by myself because it was really cold and Kate wasn't feeling it, and I'm like, I'm an adult and I want to go see Star Wars, so I'm gonna
to
do
be
it
fair. Were you killing plants? Were you doing other things?
I was killing plants.
I'm always interested in what Kate's doing. Sorry, Chris.
Okay, killing plants, by the way, is a code word we have for playing video games, because I was playing Witcher 3 a while ago, and when I play open world games, I'm like this crazy person that has a fixation on just running around and gathering like the stupid plants that exist in various places in the world that you can make potions and stuff out of. So I'm just running around literally just hacking up flowers and stuff instead of actually doing the missions. But right now I'm playing Horizon Zero Dawn. So just to clear
isn't
that
there,
up.
Isn't there also a plant killing component to this game?
Oh, hell yes. Chris just watched me run around and gather plants last night. He was fascinated by that. That and kill robot deer, but never mind.
Indeed. Anyway, back to my story.
No.
Fuck you.
No, so I was in line for popcorn, and it was like, it's like one of these fancy AMCs, so they got like all this other shit on the menu, like all these, like, there's like the flavored popcorn, there was like nachos, they had like fancy, like a chili dog, and they had like these like flatbread pizzas on the menu, and I'm like, I'm kind of in a pizza mood, like, do I think this is going to be decent?
Absolutely.
And so I don't know, I felt like talking to people, which is rare, but so I asked the cashier, and I'm like, so like, give me an honest answer. Are the pizzas decent? And he just like, is like, I don't prefer them.
And he was like a kid, right?
Yeah, no, he's like college, high school, college kid. I appreciate your honesty.
That's what I will have tells popcorn. You fucking everything you need to know.
That's so cute.
I want you guys to move to the West Coast, if not just for our movie theaters. There are so many just like kind of low key, like 3 or 4 screen theaters here that are so nice. They all have like little tables and you don't have to get up when people enter your row. Oh, it's so nice.
Yeah, the one near my parents' house is like that. It's great.
I know. They're all like that here. JK, we have like, I went and saw Star Wars at the like, I think it's an AMC. I think it's a Regal, but they also sell craft beer at the Regal, even in Portland.
God damn it.
Well, because like all the little theaters here sell like super cheap pitchers of craft beer and like cheap pizza and stuff. So it's like, how are they?
Great.
Yeah, we have a second run theater next to us. It's $4 for movies and they sell pizza and pitchers of craft beer.
God, if we lived there, we wouldn't even need Movie Pass.
It's fucking incredible. I mean, like, it's second run, so we don't get everything, but I'm probably going to see Star Wars, like, at least 8 times when it's $4.
Yeah. Yeah.
When it comes next door, so. Yes. Anyway, shall we actually do a Star Wars, speaking of Star Wars?
Oh, yes. Why not?
Since everybody has been highly anticipating this.
Mm-hmm.
And just to preface this in case we sound a little bit different than we normally do. Normally, I think the three of us, if it's not a book that we've read before, we all kind of try to read at the same general pace. But we actually already recorded our kind of bonus content with at Poppy Ashright about YA, young adult fiction, which this book falls into that category. So we've all actually already read the whole thing. So we will try to keep it spoiler-free post chapter 9, but we're just going to try because all of us have already read the whole thing.
I feel pretty confident we can keep it spoiler-free.
Yeah, speak for yourself, Chris.
Oh my God. We get to the start blowing up and then you got to stop, okay?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, like literally, the chapter 9 ends with the Death Star blowing up.
Yeah, fuck. The first one. The first one.
The first Death Star.
Okay. Yeah, spoiler anyway, alert, guys. So if you haven't seen Return of the Jedi yet.
Fuck.
Thank you, Chris. No, but really, just in case, you know, we'll try to make it as business as usual as possible. But wanted to throw that out there. But in the interest of giving Poppy as good of an interview as we could, and scheduling concerns, we've all actually finished the book for fucking once. So
one in a row.
But we are talking about the beginning through chapter 9 today. So I'll hand it over to Chris and we can start actually doing a Star Wars.
Yeah, so I figure we can start with Kristen's favorite part of every book, and that's figuring out when and where in the timeline we are.
Oh, how old is important. Everyone, Chris?
Well, when the story starts, Kristen, they are 8 years old.
Exactly.
Babies!
The story starts 8 years after Ordi 66, which we find out because Sienna's family, who are so proud of the Empire, say that she is the same age as the Empire, as is Thane. So, and that is interesting in a couple ways, because one, obviously, they've only ever grown up with the Empire, and so they are, as we've talked about on past pods, the children of the Empire. But two, it means that they're the same age as Luke and Leia and Ezra.
Yes.
From Rebels. And so it's just an interesting comparison point to think of while Luke was still wasting time with his friends at Tashi Station, Thane and Sienna were already graduated from the Imperial Academy. Yep. And so it's interesting to me just the fact that the Empire kind of, in addition to everything else it steals, it kind of steals these kids' childhood because they're forced to be full-fledged adults with responsibilities.
When they're 19.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, exactly. You know what's interesting to me that I just kind of put together? The fact that, well, Shelukan is obviously in the Outer Rim, and being in the Outer Rim, it takes the Empire a bit of time to get out there and, you know, annex all those planets, but it took them 8 years to get out there. Like, it makes you kind of wonder what's been going on, like, not even like core worlds, like mid rim, that it took them that long to get out there.
Yeah, totally.
Genocide, mining.
Nah.
See other episodes of the McCores Pod for what the fuck they've been doing.
Just normal evil things.
As you know, they've been stripping inner and core worlds of all of the resources and putting people into slavery, not to rain on your parade.
So great.
It's interesting that you that we kind of like bring up the stolen childhood, I think, in this manner, because I think that's really comparable to kind of wartime. And it's interesting because when this book starts, we're not in wartime, right? You know, this is like before the Rebel Alliance has really taken hold. Correct me if I'm wrong. But these kind of like outer rim worlds are very truly like kind of into the Empire. And they're excited that they've kind of been adopted by the Empire for, I don't know, what word do they use? Not adopted, but...
Annexed,
sure, whatever. But it's interesting, right? So we have these kiddos thinking about making it to the academy, even though it's not a time of war. It's like, I'm not quite sure. I think it's either like such a... kind of like environment and culture and feeling of like battle and war that they're like, we need to go serve or something else. But it's just really like, I think it's really striking to me that it's not like a time of being actively attacked, which like we always see as kind of like an accelerant in a lot of books, like an accelerant for childhood. It's like bringing, you know, kiddos and teenagers and people in their early 20s kind of like after their time. I think this is probably kind of like the first time I've seen it in like not a wartime environment per se. I mean, it turns into a wartime environment, but I think that's kind of what makes it notable.
That's an interesting point. I wonder if just by nature of the Empire being an authoritarian government, they're... And always, you know, having tight control over all of these planets, that the wartime is kind of implied. Like, they're always ready for something to, like, come in and fuck them up. And, you know, that's why they got rid of the Jedi and eventually dissolved the Senate. And honestly, when there are senators who aren't loyal, they kind of just get... politely, quietly, you know, executed after they get forced out, that sort of thing. So I'm wondering if that's part of it. And also, it's an authoritarian government. You're encouraged to have, you know, just really,
military
really...
military service.
That, and, I mean, military service goes hand in hand with really just, like, I'm going to say violent patriotism. You know, sure. I was going to about to say nationalism, but this is not a country. Never mind. Sure is it.
It still works. I think it. Right. I think it's a nation. I think the Empire is a nation unto itself. And if you want to use that word, it might be more exact than patriotism.
Yeah. Sure. Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. Yes. And I mean, and just to add on to that point, one other thing that I think is really important, an important aspect of the authoritarian government that kind of leads us into our next point, is that military service is seen as like the desirable career. Like, because Thane and Sienna want to go to an Imperial Academy, and they want that for their own reasons, but also because it's very prestigious. Like, Thane sees it as his way to get away and be somebody. And I think that kind of leads us into looking at Thane and Sienna and the differences that exist between them in Jaelicanni and Imperial society, you know, with regards to who they are, because they're two very different people.
Jaelicanni is like one of my favorite worlds so far, which is really weird because it's not necessarily like totally different than any world that we've seen before.
It's not flashy.
Yeah, it's not super flashy. And it's very like class based. It's very like divided by class. So it's like the valley folk who I think are indigenous to the planet. Please correct me if I'm wrong.
No.
They're not native to the planet, but they came to the planet
500 about, years.
Was it 500 years or was it 150? I think it was 150.
They're the most recent human race on the planet.
Is yes, right? No. The Valley Kindred arrived 500 years ago, and then the second wave came 150 years.
Oh, okay. Got it. Sorry.
Yeah.
So, and the second waivers are obviously, like, from other planets. Yes. So they act a lot differently than the Valley Kindred, who are, you know, for lack of a better distinction, are kind of like the folks who are native to the lands.
They're like homespun folk.
Yeah, I mean, they're like, well, please, like, tell me things. I think I'm missing. Who was native to this planet?
Nothing.
Nothing. Okay.
Yeah. So
just making sure I'm not like a being white erasure person.
No, the Valley Kindred, you may recall, basically are exiles from some unnamed planet because they were royalists, I think. And whenever their monarch got overthrown, all the royalists got kicked out and they settled in Jellucan.
Got it. Yeah, I mean, my whole point with all of that was just, like, I think this is a planet with really interesting dynamics that we haven't necessarily seen before. We've seen these dynamics-ish, but the layout of the planet and the world building that happens around it and kind of this outer rim, but, like, pretty advanced society, like with a lot of culture and a lot of personality between the people and like the people as a whole, I think are new, and I think that was like really cool and interesting, and I thought Claudia Gray did a really, really good job of the world building in this.
Yeah, totally agree. I think, just to your point, one of the most interesting things about Jellucan and its class structure is that there's absolutely no gradation. There's no, you know, quote unquote middle class. There's just the Valley Kindred, who, like you said, work close to the land. And then you have the Upper Crust Second Wavers living in the mountains in their fancy schmancy homes. And it's so distinctively divided into these two classes that Thane and Sienna know multiple times that they can tell what class you belong to just by what you're wearing, which I thought was really interesting.
Yeah, totally. Chris, do you want to expand on that a bit, since I think this is your point?
Yeah, I mean, I think you two covered it really well. I think the only thing I would add is that the two groups' view of the Empire itself is very different based on these backgrounds, because as Kate was saying, they were... The first waves, the Valley Kindred's history are being exiled royalists who remained loyal to the ruling family on their home planet. And that has made them a very loyal people. That's something that they're very proud of. We have the scene where Sienna is keeping vigil outside a disgraced family's home to show that they stand with them. It's very tribalistic, I would say, and very interconnected. And they love the Empire. They see it as a new power to be loyal to. They see it as rightful rulers. They see it as an empire, as an institution that will, you know, reward them for their loyalty, which, you know, in certain ways, the Empire does reward people for loyalty.
And they're all about order, too.
And yeah, like, exactly.
Yeah.
They're all about order, whereas you have the second waivers who are the ones who are closer to the Imperial mindset, frankly, because they're less isolated, because, you know, they're more recent to the planet. They came to the planet, you know, at a time when space travel was more common, presumably, and they had more contact with the outside world. And they kind of don't give a shit. They know how the game is played, and they'll play it.
Right, exactly. I mean,
I was going to say, they give a shit insofar as they know what they know what can be gained more than the Valley Kindred do.
Yeah, I mean, Thane's family obviously are a group of special assholes, but it's pretty clear from the book that the Second Wavers are just interested in seeing what they can get out of the Empire, what business connections they can make, if they suck up to the right people, all that sort of thing.
For sure.
So it's just interesting and a good thing to keep in mind as we read more about Thane and Sienna and how their personal relationships with the Empire changes.
Yeah. Kate, so we obviously touched on kind of the class and racial implications, just insofar as those are kind of interrelated here. But do you want to give us kind of like what your thoughts are on the gender implications of Thane being a boy and Sienna being a girl?
Oh my god. So,
boys and girls.
So actually, this is a little bit of a red herring because it's me and I love going all English teacher on y'all. So
we really appreciate it because we're big dum dums. So we love a big big softball that hits us in the face instead of us knocking it out of the park. Sports metaphors.
Woo. Speak for yourself, Kristen. I'm wonderful.
Oh my god! Please quit the pod.
You didn't even get that sports metaphor. It's fine.
What are sports?
Anyway, so
Chris, you love baseball. Get the fuck out of
Jesus. Good lord. All right. So I put the gender implications of life on Jellocan, but especially life in the Empire on this as kind of a response to Chris looping racial and class implications together, because actually there is no, I don't necessarily think that race plays as big a role as you assumed, because not all of the Valley, like Sienna's family is black and Thane's family is white, and we don't really know a whole lot about the other second waivers because Thane hates them all, so he doesn't hang out with them. But we do know that not all of the Valley Kindred are black, because the Nyairs for sure are white, I think.
Are they?
Yeah.
Or at least I think not black.
Right, so
do we know that they're white? I think, genuine question. I'm not being a white asshole at this present moment.
Like, somebody can call me out on Twitter if I'm wrong, but I think one of their family members is described as having blonde hair, so at least one of them is
probably white. You're absolutely right. I think I missed that.
Sienna's talks a little bit about how, like Chris was saying, that they're, you know, they're all interconnected and they all relate to each other, but the Valley Kindred are very tribalistic, and it feels like a lot of the time they intermarry, because there's some point where Sienna talks about how her, genetic characteristics and her phenotype were passed down through her family in a direct line from the first settlers in Jellocan, and the same goes for X other family that she's talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I actually think that
division?
Yeah, or, you know, considerations are irrelevant here. I'm also really fascinated by how in the new canon it really does feel like gender is also irrelevant. We see this, I think, especially...
Yeah, it's so fucking refreshing.
Right? Like...
Oh my god.
Tarkin sees these two kids and he's just like, you two could be pilots one day. Ha ha ha. And like, he thinks that they're so both good. Outer Rim trash equally. Like, he doesn't think that Sienna's more Outer Rim trash, you know? And
thank god.
I know. And I think this is...
We're both equal trash.
Right? And I think that's been especially apparent in when we were reading Inferno Squad a few months ago, because no one ever thinks that Aiden could be less capable or less powerful or less intelligent or whatever than Gideon, even though, you know, she's a woman and she's halfy, and her dad certainly is not disappointed in her because she's a woman, but he's disappointed in her when he thinks she's failed. And I think he would treat a son exactly the same way. So that's just kind of this interesting dynamic. Like you said, it's super refreshing. That's really being introduced, I think, in the new canon books in a way that I haven't read Legends, but, you know, it's not necessarily present in other science fiction media, to be sure. It's more about being anti-human as opposed to, you know, it's humans, the Empire's human supremacist is not necessarily white supremacist, although we can certainly draw those parallels to our actual world.
Mm-hmm.
Right, or patriarchal. I mean, mm-hmm. That's the interesting thing is, like, I think it is of the patriarchy. I don't know if
the, patriarchal. I don't know if you had an extra C in there.
Okay,
somewhere.
Yeah, sorry. I think, like, especially, I think that's another super interesting, refreshing thing is we're seeing kind of, especially in the new media and in the new books, of removal from the patriarchy within the empire itself. And that's an interesting thing. Like, I think that's like a squicky feeling for a lot of people. It's like, first of all, we're getting all of this expanded, interesting. And I think we'll talk about this more during the wrap up. So I'm just kind of like planting the seeds. But especially in these first 9 chapters, though, is like we're not totally used to seeing a black woman do this well. You know, we have no real footprint for that. I mean, least of all, we have no footprint for like people going through the academy, really, besides Thrawn, which doesn't count. But but I think it's really interesting that like the more we kind of uncover of the story, the more it becomes less white and less man-centric, which is just, I think, probably pretty, you know, deliberate, but also really cool.
I think so. I mean, it's basically trying to correct the sins of the past, where casting back in the day for the original trilogy was very white and very male and very, you know, advanced in age and whatever else. So giving us that wider lens is very cool.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it makes it easier to disappear into the... Sorry, I was very distracted because our apartment settled. it makes it easier to disappear into the universe when you have...
Ask Hamlet. There are 15 ghosts in your apartment.
Exactly.
Hamlet sees ghosts. It's fine.
What was I saying? Oh, it makes it easier to like disappear into the universe as you're reading or as you're watching The Last Jedi, for example, where a lot of the extras are people of color in the background, whether they're the pilots of the skim speeders or even the Imperial, you know, the communications officers or weapons officers. Two quick points. One very, very small point. Keeks, I am going to disagree with you that we don't have a kind of footprint for what a black woman succeeding in the empire looks like, because we have Rae Sloan.
I didn't say succeeding in the empire. I said specifically going through the academy.
Oh, through the academy. Okay. That's fair then.
Eat my ass,
thank you. Oh my God. I was waiting for it.
That's why I said specifically through the academy.
Listening skills. It's fine.
Keep going. You're right and you're wrong, Chris, as always.
I know, right? Now I have no idea what I was going to say. Oh, I was just going to say, so kind of going into what all, you know, what these differences have led to, and we've talked about it a little bit with their difference of their history, the two, you know, the Valid Kindred versus the Second Waver's history on Jellocan, how it leads to differences in their personalities. But is there anything else in the class implications or the gender implications or anything that leads to, or the racial implications that leads to differences in Thane and Sienna's worldviews and kind of the way they go about things?
Well, like we were saying, the whole point, in the Second Waver's view, the whole point of, you know, being good Imperial citizens is that they're trying to get something out of it, which Thane is doing. He's using the Empire to get away from his shitty family, whereas Sienna really feels that loyalty and that patriotism, and she wants to do the honorable thing by serving the Empire, and that's totally what drives her to go to the Academy. And, you know, they're both into really cool ships and stuff, which is fine too, but at their heart, they are taking with them the values that they grew up with.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Keeks, anything to add?
No, I spaced out.
Okay. I respect the honesty. I do. All right, so let's move on and talk.
Hey, I've been talking a lot. I've been doing a really good job not fucking spacing out, except for the last 45 seconds.
Fair. So let's zoom in a little bit. You know, we've been talking about culture on Jellocan and society on Jellocan and how that affects their worldview. But let's look specifically at Thane and Sienna, and just to use them as a case study here, because we get a really interesting view of what it means to live in the Empire and be friends versus what it means to live in the Empire and have a romantic relationship or a family relationship. And I think that that's something worth exploring here. One, so, I mean, just looking at Thane and Sienna's friendship, obviously, that's something that once they get to the Academy, pretty quickly is challenged, right? Because the Academy says that they don't want you to, they are explicitly telling you to not, like, just stay friends with the people you came with because they want you to become citizens of the Empire, not from Jellicent or from whatever planet. Like, they want you to be integrated and essentially lose any individual culture that you have.
Right, which is, I mean, that's one of the key characteristics of an authoritarian government. You have to be loyal to the Empire first. And so that's how you get these cultures and societies, especially in our real world history, where people are, you know, it's kids informing on their parents or, you know, people informing on their neighbors about, you know, in this case, anti-imperial activity. They want to cultivate that kind of loyalty, whether it's through fear or, you know, whatever else.
Mm-hmm.
Totally agree with that. I mean, I think we knew that this was the case, but I don't think we've gotten, like, this particular view of the Academy before. Please correct me if I'm wrong, but kind of like this deliberate stamping out of homeworldism. I mean, it doesn't necessarily surprise me, but I think it also, like, is different from, like, recruit to recruit, especially, like, when we go from, like, the inner rim to the outer rim. I think it's probably a lot different for the outer rim folks who have a little bit, you know, not that the inner, I don't want to, like, diminish the inner rim culture, but they're so much more steeped in the Empire, I think, than the outer rim is, that there's a lot more, like, folks who live in the outer rim who have more to kind of quote-unquote get rid of if they're going to, like, ascribe to what the Empire wants them to do.
Right. I mean, that makes perfect sense because, of course, the core worlds were in the Empire for longer than any of the planets in the outer rim, which we just talked about. Unless you're Alderaan, then you're just a hotbed of rebel activity and you should be blown up, you know?
Well, but, I mean, your point is well taken, but I think Nash is a really enlightening example of just that, how, you know, in the inner rim, not only are you more steeped in imperial culture, but frankly, you have more money to travel. Like, Nash has seen Coruscant before. This is not his first time on Coruscant.
Mm-hmm.
Ved, obviously, is from Coruscant. Jude is from Bespin, which is, I want to say, mid-rim.
I think so.
And so she's traveled herself. You know, Thane and Sienna have never had the means to get off planet. And I think that's something that obviously other outer rim planets share. You know, whether we're looking at Naboo is maybe a special case. But, like, Tatooine obviously is extremely poor. And, you know, people are slaves. Like, and there's plenty of other outer, like, Lothal. Nobody from Lothal ever gets off the planet because that's the entire point of Governor Price and why she wants off so bad. So it is interesting to see that. I do think that Outer Rim people who are newer to the Empire and less steeped in the Empire are thrown deeper into the pool and given, I think, less leeway in terms of keeping their friendships or not. They're really encouraged not to. And that applies to romances as well. Like, that's kind of something that is difficult for Thane and Sienna in that, like, once they realize that they're having feelings for each other, they're explicitly told they're not allowed to have relationships, and they kind of feel like outsiders in that.
Catching feelings.
It's interesting because it's like in the Academy, they're explicitly not allowed to do that, but once they graduate, they're explicitly totally allowed to do that.
Well, yeah, you get it.
And like we see a lot of like Empire couples in the books, I think, so far.
You gotta poop out babies so you can, like, exactly, keep perpetuating the fucking Empire.
Well, and that's why it's so interesting. It's, like, doesn't make any fucking sense, in my opinion. I'm like, I think you broke them.
So, well, first you have to indoctrinate them, and then once they fucking love the Empire, they're like, oh, yes, let me get roll pregnant so I can help the Empire out. I don't know.
Yeah, but totally. I mean, and that's, I think, a really good segue, because the one thing that we learn about personal relationships is that they're always the second most important relationship in your life. And the first most important relationship is the relationship between you and the Empire. The Empire is always right. The Imperial Academy is always right, even when they're setting you up for failure. You're expected to deal with it. You're expected to listen to them when they tell you who you should and should not be friends with. You're expected to do your duty before any personal responsibilities, not take vacations, not go see your family back on your homeworld.
Right. I mean, I think we've seen a portrait of the quote-unquote ideal imperial marriage, and we see how it ends up. Aiden Versio's parents are exactly a perfect imperial marriage. They both work for the Empire. They're both super loyal. And they got divorced because holy shit.
Yeah.
It's interesting because, like, the foil to that, I think we have, and they're obviously not the perfect imperial parents, is Jin's parents. And they end up super dead. But also, like, they're not imperial their whole lives. But we also don't have, like, the whole backstory on Jin's mom. So Catalyst. I don't know how that works or doesn't. But obviously, like, they were all complicit in the Empire to some degree for some amount of time. And they were a very tight-knit family. So I think they're kind of, like, what I think of as the foil to the Versios.
That's actually an interesting point. Whenever, I don't know when the flying fuck we're going to read Catalyst, but when we do that.
Yeah, who knows?
Soon.
It'll happen.
Because
we can talk about that. After we record, let's talk about what we're reading.
Sure. But, I mean, that book, I think Chris has read it, of course. So
yeah, I have.
That one deals a lot more with Lyra, yeah.
Yeah, so I think that's a really great Lyra, point, Geeks, that we need Lyra.
Sorry. Lyra Balakwa is the protagonist of The Amber Spy, like His Dark Materials by Philip Pullman, and that's how her name is said, but it's spelled the same way. So I always fuck up. Anyway, go on.
Chris, no spoilers, but am I totally off base in thinking that they're foils?
No, I was going to say that you're totally right, and we should revisit the Versios and Thane and Sienna when we talk about personal relationships in the Empire when we read Catalyst, because that's an excellent point.
Chris, tell me I'm right.
I did.
Chris, tell me I'm right.
I did. You are.
I know you did. I'm just...
Kristen, Dad. You're right.
Sorry. I'm. Thank you so much. Okay,
Dad, pay attention to me.
Let's keep going. Dad, I love you.
One other aspect of their relationship is that I wanted to talk about is how they go through the academy. And this is something that we've gotten a few different views of growing up Imperial and going to specifically the Imperial Academy on Coruscant, as a matter of fact. Because we've seen Thane and Sienna, but we've also seen everyone's favorite supply chain baby, Eli Vanto.
First of all, how fucking excited were you guys when they got into the Academy on Coruscant? Because I was like lit. I was like, let's throw a party for them.
Oh my God.
I was like, Quinn, we have to shut down our apartment. Next week we're having a party. And he's like, what are you talking about? I'm like, never mind. nothing.
It's adorable.
It's a graduation party.
I know, like precious trauma babies. Here, let me bake you a cake. It's in the shape of the Death Star.
I was so fucking excited for them, though, because they're, like, from bumfuck Outer Rim. Like, it's amazing.
And then both of them got to go and be in the same class. Like,
oh, my God.
I know. They totally just, like, screwed over every other candidate in the Outer Rim because they probably only took so many. And everyone else is like, God damn it. I'm just going to go back to moisture farming or whatever.
Damn.
Or farming. Whatever. And,
or whatever.
And they get there and they love it, right? Like, and Thane has a few problems adapting, but Sienna loves it. It's like the best time she's ever had in her life.
It's so cute.
I know.
Right?
High school.
Versus...
No, I hated it. I was a Thane.
Same. Anyway.
And then on the other hand, speaking of hating high school, you have Eli, who is there with Thrawn, which he hates.
Oh my God.
Is from Wild Space, which he is judged for even more than... anybody who's judged for the Outer Rim.
I mean, outer space is like the lowest of the low, right?
Wild space. They're all in outer space.
Wild space. I said wild space.
You said outer space.
I did not.
No, you said outer space, Arcane.
No, I didn't.
Because I want to edit it out so it doesn't sound like you said
Listeners,
that.
Tell us if Kate said outer space or wild space.
I'm editing it all out.
I'm tired.
Kate's perfect.
Yeah. But so he's from wild space. And on top of all that, he shouldn't be there. He didn't really earn his spot. He's there to keep an eye on Thrawn, essentially.
Right. I was.
And Thrawn's like an old man, and it's weird. It's all weird. It's very weird. It's all much weirder after I've read Lost Stars. I'm like, oh, they're children. Fuck.
I know. And there's like
it's all so. I didn't think it was that weird when we were reading Thrawn.
I know. No,
it totally was.
I know. Same. Like he's whatever the Chiss equivalent is of a 40-year-old man. Like it's real awkward.
He's so old.
He's so old. Oh my god.
Chris, did you think it was weird? Were you creeped out?
Oh, I was creeped out back when we were reading Thrawn because I'd read Lost Stars already.
Yeah, I'm Chris. I read everything.
You don't have to be a show off, you fuckhead.
Eat my ass.
I did appreciate the Commandant Dean Lark crossover episode.
Mm-hmm.
True.
That's
still an asshole in Lost Stars too.
I mean,
however many years later.
It really is fascinating though to compare their Academy experiences, just because, you know, Thane and Sienna are from, you know, as we said, like bumfuck nowhere. And quickly rise to the top of their class and are pretty accepted by their peers. I feel like maybe they're not super. I mean, I feel like Sienna's pretty popular. I don't know if Thane's super popular, but he certainly isn't shunned like Eli.
I mean, they're both hot.
Thane's
so.
Also like an ass baby who's like the worst
what?
Person, but also he's so super nice. Like, Thane is just like, sorry,
an ass baby.
He's like, he's very cynical. He's like, he's hyper cynical compared to, wow, I used ass baby in place of hyper cynical, which is not helpful.
I was about to say, like, what are you saying?
Well, I'm saying, that? Sorry, ass
no
baby.
No romantic relationships.
Ass baby is Kristen for, he wants to be at the Academy, but he's still a fucking asshole. Like, he is like, everything is fucked. Even though I'm doing exactly what I'm supposed to do.
I love Thane. Thane is me.
I know, so do I. I love Thane.
Thane is me. But
well, and we're gonna get into all of that when we get into later chapters in the wrap up, because I know we're all just like sitting on our hands wanting to talk more about like Thane's crisis of person.
Well, anyway, I mean, we know he defects the rebellion. It says that on the fucking book jacket, so we can say that at least.
Oh, does it? Okay.
Yeah.
I never know anything because I read the Kindle version of the book.
Eh, whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, okay. I can barely read, so it's...
So Thane's an ass baby.
Thane's an ass baby.
But people Thane's like him anyway.
Baby. Exactly. Well, speaking of...
We like him anyway.
Him anyway. And speaking of his pending defection to the rebellion...
His ass babiness?
Speaking of his ass babiness. His ass,
so
ass babitude.
Ass... Speaking of ass babitude.
And that's the title of the episode, guys.
Ass babitude. But speaking of that, like, kind of the moment where he's pushed from, whatever, this is stupid, but it's a job, to, oh shit, are we, like, that, I think it's, like, Mitchell and Webb look sketch, like, are we the bad guys?
Mm-hmm.
Like, his are we the baddies moment is the destruction of Alderaan.
Yep.
And there's a really interesting conversation that Jude and Sienna have when, you know, Sienna is visiting from the Devastator, which, like, side note, that's a hell of a posting out of the Academy to be a lieutenant on the Devastator.
Hell yeah.
But she's visiting from the Devastator. She sees the destruction of Alderaan, somehow gets Nash into a lift so he cannot commit treason on the bridge of Alderaan.
On the bridge of Alderaan.
On the bridge of Alderaan. On the bridge of the Death Star.
Woo! Alderaan, well known
for its
breakers.
Yep. And she comes to visit Jude, who is an analyst on the Death Star, and Sienna's kind of like talking her way through this, right? Because she's trying to find a way to get to yes pretty immediately. Like, she's trying to find a way to reconcile this in her head and make the Empire the good guys again.
Yeah, she
because
so
of her
desperately wants to rationalize it, as you were about to say, because she took an oath. She wants to be loyal, and she believes in what she thinks the Empire is. She thinks it's a force for order and justice.
Exactly.
God, I can't wait to talk about this more when we've read more of the book, even though we've all read the book, but we can't talk about it right now.
Yeah, we'll talk about it. I mean, I'll read it quick. We'll do it this week. But no, and then you get her conversation with Jude, where Jude is kind of just looking at it logically, and she's like, well, if we take the Empire's assertions that Alderaan was, you know, a rebel base at its face, and that it was, you know, everybody was essentially somehow involved with the rebellion, which they're Imperials. They're told to take anything the Empire says on its face. If you take that as fact, and you look at the growing strength of the rebellion as Thane sees on Dantooine, then it, you know, then you need to take drastic action to save lives.
Sorry, I just have a side note. I really enjoy Thane being like, oh, this is an actual army now, when he gets to Dantooine, as opposed to us reading from a certain point of view. And there's that one cartoon where the Empire gets to Dantooine to check it out, and it's just like a box.
Yeah,
totally. Anyway, sorry, go on. I just had to laugh.
No, same, because I think that's like the most interesting. I mean, that's like the most we've learned about Dantooine at all, right?
Yes.
Which is cool.
Yeah. Well, it seems like...
I think this is... Sorry, can I go on one short tangent? I think this is a really, 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 really cool book to read after a certain point of view. Because From a Certain Point of View spanned all of A New Hope. And this book spans kind of like all of the movies leading up to episode 7?
Yeah, it's basically all the original trilogy plus some of Chuck Wendig's Aftermath books.
That's what I thought. Yes. Thank you for being more specific than I can be.
That is okay.
But I thought it's interesting because, like, From a Certain Point of View gave us, like, so many new angles and points of view of A New Hope, and actually, like, whether or not it was supposed to, and it probably was, because Claudia Gray's a genius. This book gave us, like, so many interesting new points of view about the entire original trilogy, which I thought was fucking cool.
So awesome.
Oh, absolutely. So, and I mean, so I think one thing that is really interesting, and From a Certain Point of View and now in Lost Stars, is it's not common knowledge within the Empire how well-equipped the Rebellion is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, some people know. General Tag knows. Admiral Moti very clearly doesn't. Like, Admiral Moti is like, they're no match for the Death Star. Let's all pop the champagne. Tarkin, I'm sure he knows, and I also, he doesn't seem to care.
Right,
because he's very super weapon focused, and he's like, if they have guns, we'll build a bigger one, and it'll be fine.
Right.
Like, so it's interesting because, like, Thane is really surprised, but I feel like a lot of Imperials were very surprised by Scarif, obviously, in Rogue One, but also Dantooine, and seeing this is not...
It's not a box.
Yeah, this is a rebellion. This is not, like, a tiny uprising. This is a rebellion.
Yep.
And so, kind of getting back to Jude and Sienna's conversation, you have Jude saying, well, look, if these are the facts, and we want to maintain order and avoid a full-scale war, we need to take drastic action. And it reminded me of two things when she said that. One is that we kind of had this conversation with talking about the story The Trigger, featuring Dr. Afarin From a Certain Point of View, where she's kind of going through the same thing in her head of like, well, I don't really like the Empire. This seems really evil. But then again, like, the Clone Wars were really bad, like, trying to justify this in her head. But also, I found a really interesting parallel of what Claudia Gray did between this and the justifications, the kind of historical justifications that we've been taught for the U.S. bombing Hiroshima and Nagasaki with atomic bombs in World War II. Because, like, it's that same thing. It's the war is going to keep going. An invasion of Japan is going to, you know, cost millions more lives, which I... For our listeners, I'm aware that those figures are very much in dispute in modern history, but that's the narrative that we've been told historically, and at the time, certainly.
Yeah, that's certainly what they told themselves.
That's what I learned growing up.
Mm-hmm.
But, again, it's that same argument of the justification of super weapons and finding a way to get to yes in an empire.
Well, it almost reminds me of our mini episode about Saw, we were talking about the numbers game of war, and it really does remind me of Saw's mindset. You know, how many lives can we sacrifice, whether they're innocent or not, in order to, you know, advance the greater good, or, well, the Empire's not good, but, you know, the whole point of the thing.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I think a really interesting question to ask, which I don't know that we'll ever get an answer to unless they give us more stuff from Saw's point of view in the future, is if Saw had had the ability to build a Death Star, would he have?
Ooh. Oh, Chris, that's a big, interesting question.
Oh, my God.
We could do a mini episode just on that.
Yeah, that'd be so interesting.
Yeah, it'd be a cool mini debate. Like, maybe we'll finish. We'll get to the end of Rebels. We'll see if there's anything else from Saw's point of view is forthcoming from Del Rey. It'd have to be from Del Rey. That's not young adult material.
No.
But, like.
Thank God.
Yeah. Right. But it's interesting because, like.
Oh, like, this is young adult and there was so much death and dying.
There's a lot of death and dying in here.
Which I know we're going to talk about more in the wrap up, and I don't want to jump the gun.
Yeah. But it is. It's just interesting because we have this view of the Empire being evil. And as readers, obviously the Empire is being very bad, and we're kind of like in on the secret of like we're the omniscient readers, and we know that the narrators are wrong. But it's interesting to think about kind of the calculus that goes into loyalty and nationalism, to use the phrase you used, Kate, in the Star Wars galaxy.
No, I mean, I think we'll, Lord willing, this will be one wrap-up episode, but I think we all have so many feelings that we might try to budget for two wrap-up episodes. What? You know, yeah. How I like to worry about how long things are.
One is us talking, and then the other one is just incoherent screaming.
Yeah, one is me and Kate talking, and one is Chris talking. sorry, Chris. You're doing a great job letting us talk.
Yay.
But I think, like, there are so many parallels with other things that, you know, I don't want to discredit or diminish anything else that we've read, but I think there's so much more going on in this particular book that it might warrant kind of two wrap-ups. I mean, or a wrap-up and a bonus.
A lot of plot lines, a lot of feelings, a lot of, you know, relationship sort of.
Well, and you know, we already have like the Poppy content, the Poppy Ashrite content. You know, thank her for being on the show.
Thanks, Poppy.
So, you know, there's that, but I think there's also just like, for this being, and I don't mean to phrase it like that, but this is a YA book and there's so much shit to unpack. There's so much to unpack. It's
fabulous.
And it's really, really, really interesting and good.
And yet, it all, I mean, when you look at the actual size of the book, it's like 550 pages, at least in paperback. And you're like, damn, this is a long book, especially for YA. And then you actually read it and you're like, how did she pack all this shit into 550 pages when, well, like, Harry Potter needed kind of, seven books? Anyway.
Yeah. That was kind of, well, and that was kind of the point that I was going to make, is like, the reason that this would warrant more than one wrap up is this is all three original trilogy movies in one book. And that's the first time we've ever come upon anything kind of like this since, you know, we started the Book Wars pod, I think, unless anybody wants to remind me of something I'm forgetting, because I have such a great memory.
I think you're right.
I mean, I think in terms of sheer years, I think Thrawn may be close. But, yeah. I mean, it's certainly nothing in terms of the detail. Like, Thrawn was a series of vignettes that fit into a timeline. This is, you know, stories of their lives.
Yeah.
Cool.
So, Chris, you want to wrap us up?
I would love to wrap us up, Kristen. Thank you all for listening as we talk about Lost Stars by Claudia Gray. We'll be continuing next week talking about chapters 10 through 21. In the meantime, please join the discussion. Hit us up on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, at Book Wars Pod on all those. If you have thoughts on the Saw's Death Star question, let's talk about it. Email bookwarspod@gmail.com. Please rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. It is the best way to help people discover the show. It's also good to make sure that Star Wars podcasts that are promoting positive voices in the fandom are being put out there and being spread around, and making sure that the fandom isn't being given a bad name. Anyway, that is our show. Our theme song is Whiz Bang by Poddington Bear. Our logo and artwork are by Joby Terra Design. Thank you so much for listening to episode 33 of the Book Wars Pod, and we'll talk to you next week.
Yeah. Yeah, what's the word for not moving that I can't remember?
Stationary?
Stationary, fuck.